For the first few years of a child's life, she sees herself as the center of the universe. And this is appropriate. She's focusing all her energy on her own survival and growth. After a while, the child starts to grow out of this. She meets playmates and realizes that she has to share toys with them. A sibling is introduced to the world, a harsh introduction to reality, to have to share her parents' attention. The older she gets, the more the child can sympathize with other people, see things from another person's point of view, make sacrifices for other people. The world gradually becomes bigger than just the self. I know very little about psychology and about the study of human development, but I think I know just enough to see the truth of this idea that we grow out of our narcissism. On the other hand, I think there's a sense in which we're never really done with this process. We'll never completely let go of the idea that we are the center of the universe. When we're young, we see people and systems working for us. The education system is set up for us. Our parents and grandparents think we're the best thing since sliced bread. When we're old, we gain more power and influence. We may begin to think that our power and influence in our own little circles means something. We're pretty important stuff. And even if we're in a stage of life that doesn't involve people serving us or people respecting us, we might fall into a sort of trap of self-pity, where we still spend all of our energy thinking about ourselves. We human beings, constantly at the center of our own universes, could tend to approach Lent in this same old way. We give things up for Lent, but why? We might secretly be thinking, look how tough I am. I'm giving up caffeine for 40 days. Or, look how spiritual I am. I'm adding an extra 10 minutes of prayer to every day of Lent. We're tempted to take these good disciplines on for the wrong reasons. In a moment, we'll have an opportunity to have ashes applied to our foreheads. One of the traditional phrases that's spoken when these ashes are applied is, "From dust you have come, and to dust you shall return." We're only human, after all. Ash Wednesday reminds us of our mortality. The dust and ashes remind us that God scooped up humanity out of a pile of dirt in the book of Genesis. The ashes remind us that there's something about our current condition that needs to be mourned. We're not as we should be. We're like the child who is startled to recognize that not everyone exists to serve her. It's not all about me, is one of the first lessons that Ash Wednesday has to teach us. The second lesson that Ash Wednesday has to teach us is that it is all about God. Today is the first day of Lent, a season of 40 days of walking to the cross with Jesus, a season of 40 days of self-discipline and self-renunciation, a season of 40 days of focusing on prayer, focusing on God. The Westminster Catechism asks in its first question, "What is the chief end of man?" In other words, what are we doing here? The answer, man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. It's not all about me. It's all about God. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. As we walk towards the cross in these 40 days, we see the gift of grace that God gives us anyway. Lauren Winner reflects on her experience of Ash Wednesday. She writes, "The cross on our foreheads is meant to be a dramatic reminder to ourselves, and it is that. When my priest looks at me and says, 'Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return,' I know what God did for me. He not only created me, he then poured out his grace upon me in the blood of his Son. Me, a bunch of dust. God's gift of grace is given in and through the covenant community. And that's where Isaiah 58 comes in. It's not all about me. It's all about God. God teaches me that by giving me other people. There's two ways to learn self-renunciation, and we have to do them both. One is by fasting and giving things up for Lent. The other is by giving of ourselves, like Christ, to care for the least among us. No wonder, then, that God had some harsh words for the prophet to speak against those who took one, but not the other. God had a problem with those who decided to fast, but decided not to care for the poor. I'll do the fasting, sure, said Israel, because I think it will make God like me. But actually giving up my comforts to work for social justice, too much sacrifice. Isaiah 58 uses such beautiful language to describe the salvation that God brings to the covenant community when this kind of justice is happening. It's so beautiful. It makes me picture God scoffing at the people who think that working for justice would be too much sacrifice. It is hard work indeed, but sacrifice, I can imagine God saying. How can you say that it would be a sacrifice when you see what I have in store for you? How could it be a sacrifice to live in a place of true justice? The prophet promises, your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. When we think about why the prophet calls us to this fast of justice, I think that verse 7 is key in Isaiah 58. What is true fasting? Asks the prophet, hypothetically. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? Not to hide yourself from your own kin. Now, this could just be referring to fellow Israelites. Take care of your own kin, your distant relatives. But it's included in this list of the hungry, the homeless poor, and the naked. When you care for these, for the least of these, you care for your own kin. In other words, we belong to each other. God has given us, the covenant community, as a way of showing us his grace. We are a people whose foreheads are marred by ashes, a dusty people who will one day die. But in the meanwhile, we are called to fast from narcissism. We're called to fast from injustice. We're called to fast from selfishness. We need each other. We need what rich can do for poor, and what poor can do for rich. We need each person to be valued before any one of us can claim dignity. And to do all of this, we need the grace of God. With the Easter promise of justice, shalom, and resurrection on the distant horizon, we make our way to the cross. We recognize our brokenness and our mortality. We fast, not because it makes us look good, but because we are called to radical acts of justice. And we do it all only as Jesus Christ carries us along the way. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.